relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600. This is America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very excited to introduce our guest host for today, Trish Regan.
Oh, and I'm very excited to be here, everyone. Thank you so much, Seb, for having me in today. I am Trish Regan. I am host of The Trish Intel Show. Make sure you download the podcast if you haven't already. You can subscribe on iTunes, you can subscribe on iHeartRadio, on Spotify, and of course on my website, where you can follow all the news of the day at trishintel.com. It's great to be here with all of you, and I'm very happy to introduce my next guest, who is an authority on all things markets and economy, my friend Steve Cortez. Good to see you, Steve. Good to talk to you, Steve.
Hey, Trish. Thanks so much for having me. We've done a lot of TV together. I think this is our first radio.
Hey, first time for everything, right? Hey, that's the great. Market up 250 today, looking pretty good. We've got unemployment at a level that nobody really thought or expected until sometime next year, 7.9%. We've got the Atlanta Fed talking about 33% growth. I mean, gosh, I'm kind of wondering if we even need any stimulus. Things are looking pretty good on the surface. Peel back the layers, if you would, Steve. Tell us what's really going on.
You know, I think the devil's not in the details. The angels are in the details, because if we look beneath the surface, Trish, I think the numbers just get better and better when you dig into this economic recovery. And the president is really not exaggerating when he calls it a super V-shaped recovery. This recovery has been swifter and broader than I think any of the experts, certainly the Wall Street experts or the economists, believed it would be. And let's put some actual numbers on it. We right now, we've seen over the last 5 months, over 11 million jobs added back to the economy. We know we still have work to do. We're not back to the heights of the Trump boom that we were enjoying in the early couple of months this year before the China virus hit. But nonetheless, we should rightly celebrate that amazing progress, and not just jobs, Trish, but also quality jobs, because the wage acceleration in this most recent September report was all the way up to 4.7% on an annual basis. So that shows us that we're not just adding jobs back, but quality ones, ones that pay well. If we look at manufacturing wages, and this is critical because manufacturing is really roaring back to life in this country, manufacturing wages in that same September report just hit an all-time high. For the Trump administration, even including the challenges of the coronavirus, manufacturing wages have now risen 11.3% for his term in office. If we compare that to the last 4 years of Obama-Biden, so I'm not penalizing them for the 08-09 recession. If you look at their second term, the growth rate of manufacturing wages now is 50% higher than it was during the Biden years when he was in the White House. So it's really an amazing story of an American economic renaissance. And I believe that Donald Trump, the man who created incredible prosperity in his first 3 years in office, is now doing it again. This is going to be his amazing economic encore, the Trump boom 2.0.
Right. But the problem is, if he's not successful, we're talking about the antithesis of an economic boom. I mean, I look at this policy and I'm looking at cap gains going essentially to 40%. Now they'll say, only if you make over $1 million. Well, I'm sorry, Steve. That acts as a drag on the entire economy. You can explain this, right? I mean, it's a ripple effect. If you say, okay, we're not going to have, we're going to tax investment, any money that's going into the market. If you make a lot of money and, you have more than $1 million on hand, we're going to tax you at 40%. Well, then why the heck do you even want to bother investing it? Because don't forget, it can go to zero. I mean, it's like Vegas, right? It can go to zero. Right. And you don't want to lose it. You've already paid tax on that money. So that's a stupid policy, in my opinion. You know, really, it's just plain old stupid. And then they're talking about redistributing income, basically, by you know, taking from the people that are earning and giving it to people who are not earning. And I understand they want to be, you know, fair, and government should be there for people in times of need. But at the same time, don't we need to be incentivizing people to work?
Right. No, of course, to work and to take risks and to invest and innovate. And, you know, look, in reality, government always taxes things that it wants less of, right? That's why we have sin taxes, right? You tax alcohol so you get less drinking. You tax tobacco so you get less smoking. Well, what happens if you tax capital? You get less capital, right? And capital formation is the mother's milk of innovation. And by the way, America does this better than anyone in the world when it comes to things like private equity, angel investing, you know, all the for business formation. I mean, this is part of America's DNA, thank goodness. And we're just now reclaiming it, by the way, because we had lost a lot of that entrepreneurial spirit and zeal during the Obama-Biden years. It was coming back with fervor before the China virus. Now it's happening again, you know, again for an encore. Part of encouraging that is sensible, restrained taxes and regulation. What Joe Biden threatens to do is a $4 trillion tax hike on the American people, by far the largest in American history. To put it in context, that's twice as big as anything even Hillary Clinton proposed. And he keeps lying to the American people and saying that only people who make $400,000 and up are going to pay it. But that's simply not true, because he says he will reverse all of the Trump 2017 tax cuts. 82% of the American people got a tax cut from the 2017 bill. So he is simply incorrect, and he's trying to spread a lie to the American people. Now, the heaviest tax increases will go to the upper end. That's true. He's correct in that. But everybody is going to see their taxes go up. And more importantly, even than just that personal, as important as that personal levy is, as punishing as that can be, just think of what it does to the trajectory of this economy. I mean, I really believe, again, not just I believe, the numbers show us that we have right now an incredible V-shaped economic rebirth going on in this country. The quickest way, unfortunately, to smash that would be to elect Joe Biden, because not only the taxes, Trish, but also he would take us back to a place of economic submission to China. If you look at his career, his almost 50 years in the Washington swamp, if you can give him a, quote, accomplishment, and I say quote because it's not really an accomplishment, he's been very deft at shipping American jobs all over the world through terrible trade deals. And his fingerprints were all over every awful trade deal from NAFTA to China's inclusion to the WTO that had been afflicting American workers for generations, quite frankly, in this country. This president has stopped that. He has stood up to China. He has put punitive tariffs on them to try to compel them to be fair and reciprocal in trade. Joe Biden has already promised that he will lift those tariffs immediately with no concessions from Beijing. That's the kind of economic supplication he portends for America. And I think this is the most compelling case for Donald Trump. It's why, you know, in all of my messaging out there on shows like yours, when I'm taking to TV, I bring it back to the economy. Number one, I think it's our most persuasive case to get reelected. But number two, it's what the American people care the most about. And all polling shows us that this is far and away the number one.
And this
one
is why they elected him. I mean, what's amazing, and not to bring up Michael Moore, but by the way, even Michael Moore thinks that there's a good chance the president will be elected again. But Michael Moore pointed out how back in 2015 or 2016, the president stood up there at the Detroit Auto Club and basically said in front of all the auto executives, hey, guess what? If you're going to start, you know, sending all these jobs overseas, I'm going to charge a 35% tariff on all the stuff coming in from Mexico. And nobody had had the the guts to do that before,
right,
Steve? And this is a president who said, "Let me." I'm going to use his slogan and the title of the show. Let me put America first, right? How do we preserve the American economy and American jobs? And to heck with the big businesses and making sure that these CEOs are happy and shareholders are happy. I want to make sure everyday Americans are happy. I mean, this had not been heard of really from either side,
right? You're right. It's economic populism, economic nationalism, and it's working for this country, by the way. You know, the proof is in the numbers. The first 3 years of the Trump administration, until we were hit by the pandemic, we added 500,000 manufacturing jobs in the United States. Compare that to Biden's record. During his 8 years as vice president in the White House, America lost 200,000 manufacturing jobs. And his boss, Obama, told us that they could only come back with a magic wand.
Right. Well, but that was the mantra, right? Like those jobs were never coming back. They were gone for good. And there was so much pessimism. And all of a sudden, Donald Trump came along and said, wait a second. But yeah, of course they can come back. You guys just have had the whole wrong policy for all these years.
Right. Exactly. And he compelled them back. Right, through creating the conditions for success, restrained taxes, restrained regulation, and then smart trade deals. That combination has been fantastic for American manufacturing. But by the way, I believe we're just getting started. I think what could happen in a second Trump term, if he's reelected, I really believe 2021 could be the best year in American history. I believe that. 2019, before the pandemic, we now know was the biggest income gain year in American history. 6.8% wage growth for the year. Absolutely stupendous achievement. We did it in 2019. We can do it again in 2021 if we reelect Donald Trump.
You mentioned that 6.8%. That was a big deal. And that was from median income, 9% growth among poor Americans. And, you know, these are numbers that are the reverse of what we saw during the Obama-Biden years, when you actually saw a decline in median incomes and you saw a decline in poor Americans' incomes. So we need more of it. The good economic policy that he has been able to generate is worth its weight in gold. What's your sense of how that's going to play out?
You know, listen, here's my honest take. If I take off my partisan hat for a moment and pretend I don't work for the Trump campaign, which of course I do, but if I try to be objective, I think the battleground states are all in play. I really do. I think they could be won by either side. I like our side better because of this economic momentum. And I think ultimately that's going to be the key decision driver for most voters, even in this highly unusual year of 2020. I think that calculus will be the normal election calculus. Who's going to make me more prosperous and the country more prosperous? And so given that, I believe we're going to win. But listen, we are fighting and grinding in every one of these battleground states.
I know you are. Okay, keep up the good work. Thank you so much. Steve Cortez, everyone. I'm going to be back. Trish Regan here today for Seb Gorka. Back after this.
Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
Oh, my thanks to Seb for having me in with you here today. I am Trish Regan. I am host of The Trish Regan Show, trishintel.com. You can download it on Spotify, on Apple iTunes. You can see me on YouTube quite a bit as well, along with Seb, where he is, I know, daily. Anyway, we've got a lot going on Capitol Hill today. The Senate Judiciary Committee is beginning confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett to serve as the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. In remarks prepared for her opening statement, Judge Barrett noted, "I believe in the power of prayer, and it has been uplifting to hear that so many people are praying for me." In past Senate hearings, Judge Barrett has had to face some pretty scurrilous attacks on Catholic faith, but she triumphed, much like Jack Denton did, after Alliance Defending Freedom helped defend his rights at Florida State University, simply for sharing in private his Catholic beliefs with other Catholic students. A smear campaign was started, and Jack was removed as president of the Student Senate. But as we told you earlier this month, Alliance Defending Freedom filed a lawsuit against the university. And here is the update. On Friday, October 9th, a Florida court ruled that Jack's free speech rights had been violated and ordered Florida State to pay him as president of the Student Senate while the lawsuit continues. ADF can only fight and only win religious freedom battles like this with your help. So please go to SebGorka.com and click on the ADF banner. Your gift of $100 or more defends religious freedom from coast to coast. Just go to SebGorka.com or you can call 1-877-412-5888. That's 877-412-5888 to join Seb Gorka and me in supporting Alliance Defending Freedom. My goodness, we have a lot to be talking about when it comes to freedom right now, because it seems increasingly as though our freedoms are being curtailed. And this includes our freedom of speech. It includes our freedom of religion, as we were just talking about. I mean, when you think of how they've been going after her for her freedom of religion, right? This is something that one of the senators pointed out today, Senator Josh Hawley, talking about how this anti-religious nonsense, it just has to stop. Here we go with cut one.
Judge Barrett is a Catholic. We all know that. Heck, 65 million Americans are Catholics, and many, 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 many millions more are Christians of other persuasions? Are they to be told that they cannot serve in public office, that they are not welcome in the public sphere unless the members of this committee sign off on their religious beliefs? And I would just say to my Democrat colleagues that these years now, this pattern and practice, as we say in the law, of religious bigotry, because that's what it is. When you tell somebody that they're too Catholic to be on the bench, when you tell them they're going to be a Catholic judge, not an American judge, that's bigotry. The pattern and practice of bigotry from members of this committee must stop.
You know, he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. The idea that they point to her Catholicism and say that somehow she can't be a judge because she's Catholic in her faith. I mean, come on. That is not the country that we are. I mean, too often nowadays, they are using whatever they can against anyone that they perceive as having a different view. In this case, a conservative judge. You know, it's not a direction that we really can or should ever continue in. And when you think about sort of this infringement that's going on and how outsized it is than anything we've ever seen in the past, it's massive. And it's not just whether it be freedom of religion and she can't be a judge because she's Catholic. It's not just freedom of speech where there's a cancel culture going on and you can't say what you actually think for fear the corporation's going to come down on your head. It's also sort of our freedom to prosper, if you would. You're talking about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris looking at putting in policies that would hurt our economy and hurt our small businesses and therefore hurt the American livelihood. I mean, one of the great successes of the administration in the last 4 years has been this massive change and swing and turnaround in our economy, something that Obama would have told us it just couldn't be. It couldn't happen. And Joe Biden joined him in that. In fact, it was in 2010 that Joe Biden actually said at a Russ Feingold fundraising event that, you know, these jobs weren't coming back. I mean, this was the line, right? They were feeding everybody. These jobs aren't coming back. You know, less than 2% growth. That's the new normal. President Obama telling Steve Croft that. On 60 Minutes, remember, this is the new normal. You just have to get used to it. You know, America just isn't like what it once was. And I'm sorry, you know, Americans, we don't want to take that. We don't want to, you know, sit back and say this is the new normal and we can't do anything about it. I mean, talking about a defeatist attitude. No, that doesn't play in Peoria, as they say, right? So along comes Donald Trump, who says, wait a second, I got a plan to fix this. You guys just have the wrong policy. The wrong trade policy, the wrong tax policy, the wrong economic policy. We just need to, you know, goose this thing and it's going to be fine. And that's exactly what he did. Lowered taxes, created less regulatory hurdles. So what do you know? You unleash the American entrepreneur spirit. And we saw American capitalism at work right up until coronavirus hit. Right? That's what that success was about. And you saw, thanks to better trade policies, jobs coming back from places like China. You know, that matters. When you sit there and you tell people to just accept the new normal and they better just get used to it, that these jobs are gone. These are their livelihoods. You shouldn't have to have a PhD, right, to take care of your family. There was a time in this country when you could graduate from high school or not even graduate from high school and get a decent paying job and have a couple kids and a picket fence and a dog and 2 vacations a year, right? And those days, it seemed, under Barack Obama, increasingly were gone. And not only were they gone, we were told, don't worry about it, it's never coming back. Sayonara. That is not something that people are willing to accept. Nor should they ever accept. You know, we should always strive for greatness. And so that's what he did. He brought an optimistic message, a message of hope to American workers, who, by the way, have seen an increase in median income at levels that we never saw in the last several decades, at levels we certainly never saw during the Barack Obama, Joe Biden years. And the idea that we might actually go back to a Joe Biden administration that's reminiscent of those Obama years, that's reminiscent in policy, both from an international trade standpoint, as well as an economic standpoint, as well as a tax standpoint, I'm sorry. You know, they want to boil this whole thing down to personalities, and you're just not supposed to like Donald Trump, and he's just, you know, he says things that shouldn't be said, et cetera, et cetera. It's about a whole lot more than personality, let's be very clear. You know, and by the way, there are things that I really like about his personality. I like the fact that he'll actually answer a question, you know, unlike some of these other politicians who never actually want to give you an answer to anything. He'll actually answer the question, even if it gets him in trouble. But the point being, again, that the policy is what matters so much. And the policy is what is going to be a differentiating factor in our lives for many, many years to come. So when you go to the ballot box on November 3rd, it's not just about who you like, who you don't like. It's not just about, you know, being spoon-fed a bunch of garbage from the mainstream media. It's about what is the policy that's actually going to enable our economy to have a successful, prosperous future. I look forward to you calling in. This is Trish Regan, everyone. 1-833-33-GORKA, 1-833-334-6752. We got a lot more in store. Don't go anywhere.
FDNY firefighter Stephen Silver gave his life while saving others on 9/11, and the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. I'm asking you to support this cause that's committed to honoring our nation's heroes and ensuring people never forget 9/11. Help Tunnel to Towers to do good. Donate $11 a month at tunnel2towers.org. That's tunnel2towers.org. Thank you.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Job Creators Network.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. I am in for Seb Gorka today. It's great to be here with you. You can catch my podcast. You can download it on Spotify, on Apple iTunes, on iHeartRadio, and now brand new today, Amazon. I'm on the Amazon podcast. They've just launched a podcast venture, and yours truly is there. So check it out. You can go to trishintel.com, and you can get all the news that I'm watching there. And again, you can download the Trish Intel, Trish Regan Show on all these various formats. I'm really shocked by just how crazy the media has gotten. I mean, I was saying earlier in the program, I open up my phone in the morning. It's like one hit after another. Boom, 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 boom. They're trying to outdo each other. Who can have the craziest headline about how much they hate Donald Trump? And by the way, no one's ever talking about policy, right? No one ever talks about the economy, all the things that I was just talking to you about in terms of manufacturing growth, in terms of wage growth, in terms of what kind of policies are actually going to get America on the right track. We had a disastrous 8 years. Disastrous economic experience there with Joe Biden and Barack Obama. And they just kept telling us we had to take it, right? We had to just sit by and this was the new normal. Direct quote, the new normal. Well, you know what? It's not the new normal. I think that we have proven in the last 4 years that you don't have to sit back and take it. And that America, if it has the right policies and the right leadership, can actually do a lot to grow its economy. But anyway, the mainstream media gets totally threatened by that. And so, you know, they're saying all kinds of crazy things, trying to outdo each other one after another. I want you to hear, we're going to go to cut six, Keith Olbermann, remember him? He's going after not only Trump, but any of his supporters really hard.
The terrorist Trump must be defeated, must be destroyed, must be devoured at the ballot box. And then he and his enablers and his supporters and his collaborators and the Mike Lees and the William Barrs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Pences and the Rudy Giulianis and the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it. And to rebuild the world Trump has nearly destroyed by turning it over to a virus. Remember it. that the fight is not just to win an election, but to win it by enough to chase, at least for a moment, Trump and the maggots off the stage.
Wow. Look, it seems like somebody's trying to get a little bit of attention, if you ask me. Anyway, Dan Gaynor, who watches all things media, he joins us now from the Media Research Center. And Dan, it's good to talk to you, as always. Good to have you here.
Oh, it's good to be back talking to you as well. And it's good to have Keith Olbermann back. You know, I mean, listen, because remember, everybody forgets Keith Olbermann was a really excellent sports guy, and then he became a crazy person, and then he did that for a while, and then became a sports guy, and now he's back being a crazy person again. And I mean, this is,
and there's room for crazies, right? And you're an equal opportunist. You know, crazies are fine. As long as a crazy has the right to be crazy and say what they think, I guess, you know, it's all part of the First Amendment.
Right, but the problem is, listen to him, though. He doesn't believe in the First Amendment. If you go down the list of who he wants to jail, he doesn't just want to jail President Trump or Mike Pence or Bill Barr. You know, he wants to go after Sean Hannity. Okay, so he wants to lock up people in the media who he disagrees with. And then he wants to arrest Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, he's a bit of a nut, and I get it. But the problem is that the nuts are sort of feeding the machine, and it's getting harder and harder to kind of understand who the nuts are and who the machine is, because they've all sort of merged into one, right? Which is my point, sort of, as I look at my phone and I see all this news coming in, and you know, it's the CNNs of the world and sort of organizations, New York Times, Washington Post, that we once considered mainstream.
Yeah, I don't think I consider them very mainstream for a long time, but yeah, but yes, I mean, you look at what they're doing now. The Democrats on the Hill have sort of backed off a little bit with Amy Coney Barrett. I think they don't think they can stop her, and so they're more concerned about electoral politics. But they've got the media out there saying all the evil things that they want to say, all the things attacking her faith, all the things that, you know, she's, you know, how did Bill Maher say, she's effing nuts. I mean, that's when they say that, it's like, wait a second, all she believes in is traditional values and God and Christianity, and that is treated with such disdain in the media now and hate in the media that the Democrats don't have to do it. They can just let the press do it for them.
Wow. I know. It's sort of a sorry state. I mean, do you worry about if this continues under either president, right? Because I don't think it's going away. Even under President Trump, they're going to continue to try and do this. And certainly if Biden gets in there, you know, all bets are off in terms of one's freedom of speech.
Yeah, the left no longer believes in freedom of speech. Tech community no longer believes in it. We're in deep trouble if they get their way.
All right. So good to talk to you, Dan Gaynor. Thank you so much, my friend. We have Gordon Chang coming up next. We're going to talk a little China.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
So good to be here. So good to be here. Thank you, Seb, for having me in. I am Trish Regan, everyone, host of the Trish Intel podcast, trishintel.com. I encourage you to go to the site. You can download it there or on Spotify or on Amazon or on iHeartRadio or many other places where you may get your podcast. Anyway, we've got a lot going on right now, right? They're on Capitol Hill today, as we saw Amy Coney Barrett not really get a word in edgewise with those guys. They have a lot to say to her, a lot of grandstanding. They're really, really annoyed, right, that the president has actually come forward with a nominee. As we knew he would, right? It is his constitutional duty to do that. And so for them to try and delegitimize this in any way, shape, or form is frankly just delegitimizing themselves, right? I mean, the government is there for a reason. Part of their constitutional duty, one knows, as president, would be to put forward a nominee. And it's the Senate's job to either confirm or not confirm that nominee. So, again, he's just doing his job, but that makes everybody really, really mad these days. Speaking of doing their jobs, right, this is a president that when it comes to economic policy, and this is what I have liked so much about him, really has done his job. And he's had a great economic team. Actually, Larry Kudlow, who's the National Economic Advisor, good friend of mine, former co-host, actually, in television. And Larry Kudlow is one smart man who really believes in principles like this president does of lower taxes, less regulation. And I think having that smart team with the combination of a president who really knows where he wants to go economically has really amounted to something. And so, you know, you're seeing it nationwide. I mean, federal income taxes coming down. Of course, it doesn't help you, I guess, if you live in New York or in California, right? Because in New York or California, you can no longer deduct. You can no longer deduct your state and municipal taxes, which means these people in New York and California and all these blue states that have a ton of money are actually paying more in taxes. They don't like that. And then you combine the fact that, well, places like New York City or L.A. are just disaster zones, right, where you have the BLM movement, you know, with riots in the streets that we've seen in New York City. You think about the escalating murder rate that we've seen in New York City. I mean, why would anybody want to live there? Why would anybody want to live in California? It's a worthwhile question that Bill Maher asked Adam Schiff the other day. Here we go to Cut 9.
California businesses are leaving the state in droves. In just 2018 and 19, which were economic boom years, 765 commercial facilities left, 13,000 businesses left between 2009 and 2016. Look, I came out here in 1983. I found paradise. I love California. I do. I don't want to leave. But I feel like I'm living in Italy in the 70s or something. Super high taxes, potholes in the road. I don't know what I'm getting for my super high taxes. What do you say about this as a California representative?
Well, I think we have to make every effort to make this a more business-friendly state. And I don't think there's anything incompatible with being progressive and also wanting to make sure that this is a place that businesses can survive and thrive.
Excuse me? You think that being progressive and being business-friendly can be one and the same? I hate to break it to you, buddy. But, you know, in this progressive agenda that you keep putting forward that we're now seeing from Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, you're talking about penalizing businesses, penalizing small business owners. You're talking about penalizing incomes, right? You can only make so much in that kind of world. I mean, none of that actually helps. Not to mention that what does it do? It actually sends people with money straight out of your state. I mean, Bill Maher's thinking about leaving. Joe Rogan left. I do believe Ben Shapiro's leaving as well, heading to Texas, right? Texas, where there are no income taxes at the state level, makes a whole lot more sense. And other places like Florida and New Hampshire and Nevada and states that actually think about balancing their budgets. I mean, this is not, as I've said, this is not rocket science. But, you know, when Adam Schiff is trying to come up with some kind of scenario where he can just tax businesses to death, tax individuals to death, and somehow thinks that everybody still wants to be there? I'm sorry, that's just not how it works, buddy, okay? That's just not how it works. Very quickly, we've had some wonderful people waiting on the line here to call in, and I want to get to some of them right now. John in South Carolina, you say that you think that the president needs to do something about this media that keeps going after him, huh?
Well, there are multiple things. Listen, I'm probably the last generation of quote-unquote objective reporters, so I'm one of the few conservative journalists that I've ever known, and I've got a master's degree in mass communication and an undergraduate degree in news editorial journalism, so and it was from one of the better journalism schools in the country. But I am just appalled at the way that the president has been treated, and by the way, he has allowed himself to be treated, and I'm particularly upset with the way Durham and Barr have handled these indictments and all of the information that should be coming down. And so the suggestion that I would make if I had the president's ear, and I'd like to plant this bug in your ear and also Dr. Gorka's and some others, is that the president forego active campaigning with rallies because he's preaching to the choir. What he needs to do is reach the unaffiliated people, the people who are still undecided. And the only way that he can do that would be through a video with or a series of videos, actually, with people who ask him good questions that the media have been, in other words, like John Solomon. You know, the interview that Dr. Gorka had with John Solomon, I believe it was Thursday night, where John Solomon was releasing all of this information and putting the pieces of the puzzle together. See, nobody's ever done that, and we were hoping that Durham and Barr were going to do it, and the president has to be quite upset over that. He's got every right to be upset over it.
We do know, I mean, we heard from Pompeo today, right, that all the emails are going to be released from Hillary Clinton. So that'll be a certain amount of insight. I hear you. You know, a lot of people were expecting and anticipating some indictments. It doesn't look like that's going to come down, at least not yet, not before the election. But there may be a method to the madness in that they may be thinking, wait a second, maybe it's better or more powerful to wait until after the election so it doesn't look as though it was a political ploy. But nonetheless, we will get some insight, I think, in terms of these emails. And it's a point well taken. John, in South Carolina, thank you so much for joining today. I think the president is up against it when it comes to dealing with the media, and thus it's hard increasingly to reach those people in the middle and talk to them about these meaningful policy things that are going to have a big, big effect on their lives. We've got much more coming up. As I mentioned, Gordon Chang's going to be here on the program. We're going to talk about the difference in policy that we could anticipate regarding China if it were a President Biden. He's next.
Portions of America First are brought to you by Alliance Defending Freedom.
Folks, we are just weeks away, days away from Election Day. The voting has already started in some states, and it's about to start in others. If you live in Ohio, did you know early in-person voting begins 28 days before the election? In Arizona, it's 27. That's why I need you to go to keepamericaamerica.com now. They're going to get you the most trusted, up-to-date voting information. And while you're there, please commit to take one person to the polls. Just one. Just one. Or help them complete a mail-in ballot. The 2016 election was decided by thousands. Thousands of votes, not millions. And 300,000 of you across the country have already gone to keepamericaamerica.com. I want to see that number reach a million or more. And make this the biggest get-out-the-vote effort in conservative history. One that the liberal media cannot ignore. Do a little, do a lot, do your part. Go to keepamericaamerica.com now. That's America, keepamericaamerica.com. Anyway, there's a lot at stake right now. And it's easy for people to start to feel kind of down. It's easy for people to feel like, you know, that their voice is not being heard. But I can tell you, it is. It's being heard loud and clear. You know, certainly on this platform, and we're going to go to some of you wonderful callers that I know have been waiting. Certainly on this platform, certainly on my platform, there is an opportunity for everyone's voice to be heard. And we need to welcome that, because in this country, one of our greatest strengths really is our intellectual diversity and our diversity of opinion and you know, the ability for people to have a different point of view. That should be welcome and that should be celebrated. But in this kind of day and age, it's shut down. It's shut down so fast. And the left and their cancel culture attitude has really done some damage, I think, to where we are as a society, where people, you know, certainly where I am in the Northeast, they're afraid to say that they support Donald Trump, or they're afraid to say that they support his policies. I mean, for goodness sakes, now, like, being a capitalist is kind of a bad thing, right? I mean, what has happened? We're talking about a $4 trillion tax plan. This is, like, more than double what Hillary Clinton ever came up with. I mean, this is pretty adventurous, progressive stuff. And the country's going in a direction from which we would have a very hard time coming back. I mean, you think about the 1930s and the Great Depression. It's not unrealistic to say that we could find ourselves in a situation, given what has happened with coronavirus, given the fact that we have shut down our economy, we could find ourselves in a situation, if we don't have the right policies that enable us to have freedom, economic freedom, where we're no better off than we were in the 1930s. We need to really think long and hard about all this stuff right now, because there is a lot on the line. Don't go anywhere. I am Trish Regan, host of Trish Intel. I'm in for Dr. G today, and we got a lot more to discuss.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and the Battle for 1600.